the amendment.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, so we get to touch on a couple of things this morning. We've got five different subjects for you guys over the course of DTC. We're going to do two of them this morning. We're talking about masculinity, honoring women. And I was reminded this morning about just how we want to approach all this stuff. What we're going to do is, and this is how I've kind of worked with my life. What I've done is, the Bible claims to be the words of a God that made all this place and that knows everything there is to know. So I go, wow, that's my proposition. Now I've come to be really convinced of that proposition. But really it's just a proposition. There's a claim that there's this book that's from a guy that has told us absolute real truth. It's different than anything else in the creation. It's really quite a claim. It's an amazing thing. And if anybody says you're crazy to believe the Bible, in a sense, they're right. That is a crazy claim. There is a book from a God that has given us absolute truth. But that's what the Bible claims. That's the claim. So let's just take the premise and go, wow, that's the claim. If that's true, then that's the most important thing in the world. So let's take the premise and let's bang on it. First, let's listen to what it really says. Go, okay, what does it say? Let it be honest. Let it say what it says. Don't try to morph it into something that's easier for me to believe. Just go, okay, what does this crazy book say? It's a crazy claim. It's probably going to say crazy things. What is it saying? Okay. Now I understand what this crazy book is saying. Do I think that's true? And in the end, you have to take the whole book or none of it. It's either all from God or none of it is. And Christianity really is coming to the conclusion that someone has told us things we could never figure out otherwise. It is in this book. If we work, we'd understand it. Well, this book tells us about one of the most important aspects of humanity. We talked last night. The very first thing said about every human being was boy, girl. Probably if you were born without an arm, that would still be the second thing said about you. Oh, it's a girl, but she doesn't have an arm. You know, right? It still wouldn't be first. And so we're going to look at, and for you guys, you are in a world that is way, way confused about this whole thing. And you engage with that world all the time. You engage with that world in a place in life where you're figuring it out yourself. You are growing into manhood. You are growing. You are transitioning from being a child into whatever it means to being a man. So you're right in the middle of this transition. You are processing this transition. This book is going to tell you this is the transition. This is it. And you're going to hear a million other voices. And you're going to be filled with all kinds of crazy emotions and feelings in your own life. And you're going to have to find your center. Where is my center? In my own heart, when I'm in the room, all alone, by myself. Where is my center? And Christianity is constantly going, okay, I've made the decision about my center, but I'm not there, am I? I got to get there. And there's two phases, really, deciding where is my center, and then realizing I spend lots of time not being there, but that's where I go back to. I got to get back there. This is my center. This is my center. This is my rock. This is what puts it together. And that verse that I got saved on, the one who believes in him will not be disappointed, that has never, ever failed me, ever. I have found that this rock is absolutely solid. What the Bible says. And I become completely convinced that there is an infinite being that in a very loving way, and in a way that has incredible complexities, but is also very simple, has loved us and spoken a book into the world. And in that book is the beginning of the Yellow Brick Road. start. It doesn't tell us everything about life, but it gives us where we start. And so I share these things, and I share them to you because we're a Christian group, and I speak them to you as truth, and I totally believe they are truth. But each one of us gets to and glorifies God and honors God as we sift and sort and question and wonder and make a decision and decide and then finally go, here's my flag. And even as you plant that flag, you still, you know, most of the questions that get asked, especially if someone gets saved, like I did when I was 19, I didn't ask hardly any questions about Christianity before I got saved. I didn't really need to ask any either. I didn't want somebody running my life, or I did. I just said, okay, I'm up for it. God's going to end my life. I'm happy with that. Before, I was like, I'm not going to ruin my life. But once I became a Christian, then I have a zillion questions. So you have questions all your life. And all those, because they get answered in a way that confirms truth, glorifies God and honors God in you as you love God with all your heart, soul, mind. So, I am not standing up here sharing with you this morning the party line. Okay, this is what we all believe, right? We don't have to think about it. We just believe this is who we are. Oh, you got to stand on this stuff alone. You got to believe this stuff alone. And that takes time. The Word is going to lay out what God says is there to start us with. Right, this is not a kid thing. Sometimes people turn Christianity into a kid thing. Well, here's the truth, and here's what we all believe, and we're the cookie cutter people, and this is what we say. We can't really talk to others, we don't want to talk to one another because we all believe it, but we don't know why. We're men. God calls us into manhood. We have our own convictions. We build them. And we live on them. Someday you may die. I don't think it's hard to die for convictions that go deep. So we're here as men. And we grant that to one another in our own journey of building those convictions and planting those flags. So, so I'm going to start out with a video, and it's a video of movie clips. A lot of them were probably made before I remember even born. It was made by myself and my son when he was, I think, in 10th or 11th grade, maybe 9th grade. I can't remember. We made it for a church men's retreat. We stayed up most of the night with a VCR cassette player pumping VHS video into this computer that was this awesome, incredibly, profoundly powerful computer. It had a 650 megahertz processor. And it took about 20 minutes to render 1 minute of video. And so we were up all night making this video. And back then, even church projectors were interlaced. So it has all the lines in it. But it's a picture of ideas about manhood. And it's kind of fun, and I made it with my son when he was your age, so we're going to watch it. And then we're going to talk a little bit about characteristics of manhood, okay? So, none of the movies are black and white.
Trouble. So if you want these horses, I sell them to you. Did you bring some gold with you?
No.
Silver?
Just lead.
Come to work. We will be perfect in every aspect of the game. You drop a pass, you run a mile. You miss a blocking assignment, you run a mile. You fumble the football, and I will break my foot off in your John Brown hind parts. And then you will run a mile. Perfection. Let's go to work.
Westmoreland through my host, that he which hath no stomach to this fight
drum. His passport shall be made, and crowns for convoy put into his purse. We would not die in that man's company that fears his fellowship to die with us. This day is called the Feast of Crispian. He that outlives this day and comes safe home will stand at tiptoe when this day is named, and rouse him at the name of Crispian. He that shall see this day and live old age will yearly, on the vigil, feast his neighbors and say, tomorrow is St. Crispin's. Then will he strip his sleeve and show his scars, and say, these wounds I had on Crispin's day. Old men forget, yet all shall be forgot, but he'll remember with advantages what feats he did that day. Then shall our names, familiar in their mouths as household words, Harry the King, Bedford and Exeter, Warwick and Talbot, Salisbury and Gloucester, be in their flowing cups freshly remembered. This story shall a good man teach his son, and Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers, for he today that sheds his blood with me shall be my brother. Be he ne'er so vile, this day shall gentle his condition.
And gentlemen in England, now abed, shall think themselves accursed they were not here, and hold down manhood's cheek, whilst any speaks that fought with us upon St. Crispin's Day!
Captain, how are you doing?
Respectfully, George C. Marshall, General. you, sir.
Resolve.
Sacrifice. Perseverance.
Good, great.
Conviction.
Conviction. Good word. The others?
Defenders.
Defenders?
Good word too.
Faithful.
Faithful.
Determination.
Determination. What's that?
So the humility part comes in.
Purposeful.
Purposeful. Ooh, that's a fun word.
Honor.
Honor.
Ooh, that's a great word too.
Trust.
Trust? And how would you tie trust in with man?
Oh, trustful.
Trustful. So they're trustful. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Loyalty.
Loyal. I mean, some of these words you can go, this applies to anybody, any Christian, any human being, but they sort of take on a unique expression when we stick them with manhood. And we go, yeah, that does relate to manhood,
even though it relates to womanhood and life in general. But there's a dimension of it. There's a way that, okay, there's a way that a man is honest. He keeps his word. Okay, any other words sitting out there?
Adventure. Adventure, okay. I like that word.
Bit of an adventure, just making all this good.
Way to write adventure. Any other good words out there?
Generosity.
Generosity, okay.
He's a giver, that's good.
Yeah. Giver, provider.
Prideful?
Okay, that's his fallenness for sure. Now we can talk about characteristic weaknesses of men, which we may get to.
Maturity?
Maturity? That's our end goal. This is the end goal of those things. Maturity leads here. Okay, other things?
Bravery.
Bravery? Okay, we got courage.
Don't we? Yeah, the first one.
That was our very first one. We'll tie that in there.
Self-aware.
Self-aware. Okay. Could you defend that as a uniquely masculine trait, male trait?
It's all right if you go, yeah, that there's a dimension of that that is uniquely related to men.
I think so.
Okay. Self-aware.
So Pat's going to teach later. You don't even have to ask him about it. Tell us everything he wants to. Any other words?
Grit.
Grit! Wow, that's a great word.
Inside us, and there's something in there reaching and grab, and that's what happens. People write books, they make movies, they reach in there and they grab that thing inside us. Here's a question for you. Is that masculine desire we have, is that real, or is it just a cultural thing that's been impressed on us? In other words, did God make that? Is that a God thing? What do you think?
Yes.
I think
that's a God thing, that God made that. Okay, let me ask you this. How often, when you think about growing as a Christian, because you think about it all the time, because people are always telling you, you need to grow as a Christian, you need to grow as a Christian. How often, when you think about growing as a Christian, do you think about growing in what it means to express biblical masculinity? And that is part of growing as a Christian. I want you to genuinely ask yourself that. Stop. I'll give you a break here a second for about 3 seconds. Okay, you know all the time I'm supposed to grow as a Christian. I'm supposed to grow as a Christian. How often does it come into your mind that, okay, now what that means is I need to grow in expressing whatever God has created men to be because I'm a man? Does that equate with Christian growth in your life and in your mind? And if you're honest, for most of us, the answer would be, oh, I never think about it that way. Okay, here's another question. Was Jesus masculine? What are some things that would make you go, I'm not sure he was? What are some things that would make you think, I'm not sure Jesus was, comes, you know, when I think about masculine, I don't think about Jesus. Why is that?
The way he's portrayed nowadays?
The way he's portrayed, he's not portrayed very masculine, is he?
He looks like a shampoo model.
He does sort of look like a shampoo model. did Jesus have long hair?
We don't know.
Probably not. We don't know. We don't know. But probably not. If he had long hair, Paul would not, probably not have written that men should not have long hair. Right? That long hair is a woman's glory. We don't know for sure, but he probably didn't. So, what are reasons to think Jesus was masculine?
He led some pretty masculine guys.
That's a good reason. That's a good thought. Yeah, he led some pretty masculine guys. I mean, it was no small thing to stand in front of those guys and keep them going in the direction.
He wasn't afraid to get dirty?
He wasn't afraid to get dirty.
He died a very masculine death.
He died a very masculine death.
Yeah, he looked death in the face.
He took the pain without complaining.
Yeah.
Standing after the folks at the Garden of Gethsemane when they came to arrest him, just how he handled that.
And he got everybody else out, didn't he? All those guys got him out. Yeah.
He didn't shy away when people questioned his convictions.
Never back down from anything, did
he? Defender of the week.
Defender of the week.
He stood up to Pilate.
There was never a man that he stood in front of that he didn't speak with, man to man. It was astonishing. He was just a peasant. He could stand in front of kings, and he never blinked.
Be careful for women and widows.
Yes. One of the favorite teachings I've done is the teaching on Jesus' relationships with women. It is so convicting to me how powerfully he expressed his masculinity with women around him, and yet all of it was perfectly, completely pure, but it was utterly masculine. Jesus was the perfect man. Whatever it means to be a man, he was that perfectly. So when you want to grow in kindness, look at Jesus, because every human being is supposed to be kind. When you want to grow in masculinity, you look at Jesus, because he was a man and he expressed whatever God wanted, he expressed it absolutely perfectly. Okay. Now, here's what I really believe. If we understand what God made masculinity and femininity to be, and why God made it, we will be able to answer every hard question about gender, morality, and marriage that a culture is being ravished by today. If we can understand these things, then I think so many things around us are going to fall in place. So what we've got to do is we've got to know what he made there, what is it? And why did he make it? He didn't have to do this. He didn't have to do this masculine, feminine thing that was not necessary in the creation. He did. He's got something going on there. What's he got going on? And nobody in the world knows, has any answer to that. And I'm telling you what, 95% of Christians in the world cannot answer those. So the world brings all their crazy controversies, and the Christian goes, well, I know the right answer. I don't have the foggiest idea why it's the right answer, but I know it. And because I don't know any of the whys, my answer doesn't sound very good, especially in my own heart. It's just words. I know it's right, but it's just words. And I want to take a foundation. I want to stick it under those words so that when you speak those, no one else around you may understand you. They may utterly still remain clueless, and you may never touch their understanding at all. But you will know. You will know. And then you will be strong. Okay. So, God made masculinity. It's got some purpose. So we're going to try to figure out, all right, so we got the book. Masculinity, we believe, is from him. He made this. There's something going on. There's something happening here. What is happening? What is this for? Where is this supposed to go? Where would we go to find out what's happening with masculinity and what it is? You go, man, my world doesn't know this. I got to figure it out. Where am I going to go look? In the Bible. The answer is going to be in the Bible. Okay, you're going to be hit with... So you go out and you try to express masculinity in certain dimensions out in your world, and people are going to look at you like, what are you, an idiot? Who do you think you are? What are you trying to be? I remember in my day, when I was a young man, it's the time we had to quit opening doors for women. I was taught to open doors for women. But when I was a teenager, I learned you absolutely did not do that. You open a door for a woman, and someone would go, what, you think I don't have any arms? You think I can't open a door? You think I'm just weak? And now I'm utterly offensive when I do that. Well, that's long past for you guys. Nobody ever teaches you should open doors for women, or that a woman should stand there and wait for you to do it. But you have lots of other ways they get shut down. So, you better know what's your masculinity for. What's it for? What's it for? What's it for? How are you going to figure that out? You're going to look in the Bible. And where would be a good place to look in the Bible? Why? Because when you want to figure out what something's for, one of the best places to look is, all right, let's see how it got made and why it got made. Let's go back to the beginning. Who made this? Why did they make it? What did they make it for?
Genesis.
Because I like Genesis. No.
It's getting too predictable.
I'm just blindfolded. I don't want to see any of this anymore. Okay. So we go to Genesis, chapter 1, back when you got made. You got started. Whatever your humanity is, this is where your humanity came from. And we're told that God said, let us make man in our image and our likeness, let him rule over the fish, the sea, birds of the air, livestock, that's why you can go fishing and all that stuff. But here's what we want to pull out of this. Okay, so Genesis chapter 1, God creates things. And when he creates light, what does he say? Let there be light. Let there be light. Now, let there be light. How involved does that sound like God is? Let there be light. Sounds like he didn't really do too much, right? Just let there be light and somebody made it happen. I don't know how that worked. That's how God did everything. Let there be an expanse between the waters above and the waters below. Let there be lights in the sky. Let there be creatures teeming in the oceans. Let there be, let there be, let there be. It's really just saying, hey, let it happen, and it just happens. All of a sudden, God gets to the last thing he does, and he seems to be very personally involved. We got, let us make. Let us make.
So God's going, okay, let it be, let it be, let it be. And then he says, hey, let's get together here. Can we get together? Let us make something. We're going to go do this. We're not just going to say, hey, let there be light, and somehow that happens because my words are so powerful. They're creative. My words are creative. No, I'm not just going to say, let there be man. I'm going to go, hey, let's make this. Let us get together. Let's do this thing. Let's create. Let's make it. And not only let's make it, let us make it. Nowhere in all the rest of the creative account does God present himself as plural. And God goes, hey, let's us get together. And let's make us. Let's do a selfie. And so God does his selfie. That's what he's doing. Let us make man in our image, our likeness. What's he trying to capture here? He's trying to capture the hour. It's the hour. Let's get the hour. Oh, come on, I'll get over here. Let's get our picture right here in front of these incredible trees. Before verse 26, you didn't even know there was an hour. You didn't know there was an us. You didn't know there was a we. And all of a sudden, right here, you're going to say again, the whole creative thing is like, this is done. This is your only one. Ooh, I'm a we. Let's get together and do our selfie over here. And he says he's going to make his image. Let us make man in our image, in our likeness. And let him do this. And then what does he do? So God created man in his own image. In the image God created him, male and female, he created him. What's the selfie? It's man in male and female. So we're told there's an us. There's an us, and then we're told there's male and female. What do we get out of that? The selfie is male and female, one man and one woman. Now, we don't know where that goes. What are you telling us here, God? This is the only thing you're telling us about this thing. The only thing you're telling us is that they're male and female. That's the only descriptor, the only detail we're given. This is your image. This is your selfie. Are you saying you're a man and a woman? Well, that is entirely possible. Theoretically, God could be anything. Anything. There's an infinite number of possibilities of what could be. You know, are the Mormons right? They think God's a man and a woman. And when we read the whole Bible, the answer comes out really clear. God is not a man and a woman. And we can go through all that and take about 20 minutes. We go, don't worry about that. We'll check that one out. God is not a man and a woman. Well, so what's the point here? There's a mystery here. I love mysteries. Let's unwind the mystery. What else does God say about himself? Well, here's another thing he says. So, Jason, read that verse.
The Father loves the Son and has given all things into his hand.
Okay, so here's God telling us about himself, right? How does he present himself?
Father and Son.
Right? Father and Son. Okay, so here's God saying, here's another picture of me. Here's another representation of me. I'm going to come to you and I'm going to say, I am Father and Son. Is God really a Father and a Son? What makes a Father and a Son in our understanding of it all? Who comes first?
Father.
Father comes first. Okay, did the Father come before Jesus? Read the whole Bible on that one. They are co-eternal. They are co-eternal. So okay, here's a really cool question. If God the Father really isn't, if they're not Father and Son, you answer me this. Why is God the Father called God the Father? He's not a father. In our understanding of it, why is he called God the Father? I want an answer. Yeah.
Because he's our Father.
Because he's our Father, but what does that mean? He's not, well, in one sense, he's our Father. Yeah,
he created us.
He created us,
But he didn't create Jesus. He didn't create Jesus. So why is he God the Father?
Yes. Is it authority?
Well, how does he have authority?
Well, it says Jesus was obedient to God, going to the cross.
So it seems like there might be this relational thing in the S. Remember, we know we got the S. We got the selfie. We got the guys on the hill going, hey, let's get a picture here.
We got the selfie with people, several players in here. And we get male and female. And we just set that aside. I don't know what that means. But now we're going to the place. I got Father and Son, but it's not Father and Son. It is not Father and Son. But he is still called God the Father by the Son, who is not his Son, and he's not his Father. Why are they calling him that? Why is that name playing there? And it's not Caleb, it's
Caden.
Caden, you say it's authority. Okay. That's a great perspective. So if we were to talk about the perfect relationship between a father and a son, perfect relationship between a father and a son, what's a perfect father like? Perfect father. Caring. Perfect father.
Patient.
Perfect father.
Leader.
What?
A leader.
He teaches.
I thought mom did all that.
Provides.
Listens. Supports. Most of the fathers. Perfect father.
Humble.
Okay, we're rolling in here. That would be true. Okay, perfect son.
Obedient. Respectful.
What?
Pain in the butt.
That's not the perfect one. That's what all of us have been.
Teachable.
Are you in that? I don't think so. Perfect son.
Responsive.
Is that what Jesus is talking about when he talks about the Father and the Son? Is he saying, hey, this is what we're like. This is the guys in the selfie. It's relating in this way. It's God within himself, but what happens within himself is a relationship that happens on what would look like a father and a son in a perfect way. And when we look at what happens, what does Jesus say? By myself I can do nothing. I judge only as I hear, and my judgment is just. For I seek not to please myself, but him who sent me. So what do you get out of that? What's in that attitude? What's Jesus up to?
Pleasing the Father.
Yeah, it's just, Dad, I'm tracking with you. I'm not here to do my own thing. I'm tracking. Jesus said, I do nothing on my own, but I speak just what the Father has taught me. Going a little farther, he fell on his face to the ground and prayed, my Father, if it's possible, may this cup be taken away from me, yet not as I will, but as you will. So what words do you get out of that?
He was obedient, wasn't he?
How much was Jesus willing to lose to stay tracking with his Father? Remember when he was tempted in the wilderness and the devil said he'd make some bread? Hey, listen, if you're the Son of God, make some bread. And it said he fasted 40 days and then it says, and then he was hungry. What that meant was at that point, Jesus' metabolism had changed and he was beginning to start consuming his muscle cells and his nerve cells and he was dying. And the devil showed up and said, but you are dying. You are dying. You're the Son of God. Make some bread.
said, my father sent me on a fast, and I will die before I will stop doing it. And this test will be the greatest. The prince of this world is coming. He has no hold on me. The world must learn that I love the Father and that I do exactly what my Father has commanded me. That's what we are supposed to learn. We're supposed to learn, hey, Jesus did exactly what his Father told him to do. Okay, so the Son, he unites with the Father. He entrusts himself to the Father. He finds his life within the sphere of the Father's will. But he's not the Son in our physical definition of it. He isn't the Son, but he was the Son. So when we look at Jesus, we're actually looking at it. We don't get to look at the Father, but we can't see a lot about the Father. As soon as Jesus was baptized, he went up out of the water, and at that moment heaven was opened, and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and lighting on him, and a voice from heaven said, this is my Son, whom I love. With him I am well pleased. The Father loves the Son and has placed everything in his hands. For the Father loves the Son and shows him all he does. I will proclaim the decree of the Lord. He said to me, you are my Son. Today I have become your Father. Ask of me and I will make the nations your inheritance, the ends of the earth your possession. What's Jesus doing right now? Ruling the whole creation. Ruling it gloriously. He's bringing it all into subjection to himself. How did he get there? Would Jesus have the place he's in right now without the Father? How did he get where he's at right now? What did Jesus say in the Garden of Gethsemane he wanted to do?
He wanted to live.
He wanted to live. He wanted to quit. He wanted to be done. God, hey, can we stop? Hey, Father, I'm done. Can I go home now? I've been turned into a cow. Can I go home? Line from the famous movie. And what did the Father say? No. I'm sorry, you can't go home. You have to keep going. And because he went that way, he ruled. He rules today over everything. Not because he's God, but because he, in one sense, he earned it. He rightfully has that place. He didn't just rip it out by his power. I can have whatever I want. I'm God. That's fine. I'll take it. The entire creation will look and go, you deserve that. You deserve that. You walk that road. And so the Father loves, cares for, blesses, affirms, accepts unconditionally, provides all that is good, takes responsibility for it, leads into that which is good and right. And that's kind of a summary of those two things. Now, we're going to just go a couple more slides and we're taking a break, but I want you to catch this. Relationship with God is, the thing God is complementary. So does the Father find his life within the sphere of the Son's will? Does that ever happen? Do they ever get up in the morning and go, God the Son, why don't you leave today and I'll just hang around and help you? And everything we understand, that never happens. There is a role relationship. There's a role relationship going on right now in heaven. And that role relationship is irreversible. The Father and the Son use those terms for us because they have a relationship that's been going on forever that will always go on and always rolls out along these ways. One takes responsibility for it, the other unites with it. One's responsible for it, the other unites with it. That's ultimate reality. Before anything ever existed, that's what was there. this slide right here, and we'll take a short break. So try to track with me through this. The love within God must be the greatest possible expression of love, right? Because God is what? God is love. Okay. So that's a unique thing. It's the only thing we're told that is definitive in and of itself of God. We're not told that God is holiness. We're just given as an adjective, God is holy. We're not told that God is righteousness. We're just told God is righteous. But when it comes to love, it's not that God is loving. We're never told that God is loving. Well, we are told God is loving. But ultimately what we're told is God is beyond loving. God is love. In other words, when God is present, when he is expressing what he is, when he is being, when God is being, love is happening. Well, the only way that can be true is if there is relationship within God that's always going on. God is always loving because within himself there's this profound thing going on. It's just like, man, this is always happening. This is always good. This is always amazing. It's love happening right here. And long before there was a creation, this was happening. God is love. And whatever that love is, it's got to be the greatest it can be, because if it can be any greater, God's not God. It's got to be the greatest it can be, or God can be better than he is. So whatever's happening is the greatest possible love. Now, relationship, love, can be either egalitarian or complementarian. Two pretty big words. What's an egalitarian relationship? When you have wings like an eagle, right? You fly. No. What's egalitarian mean? Equal. What's a great example of a good egalitarian relationship? What? Egalitarian relationships. They're awesome. They're amazing. You all want them. What's an example of a good one?
Like brothers.
Brothers? Friends? Friendship. That's an egalitarian relationship. I'm a friend with you. That means I acknowledge that you've got your own life and I've got my own life, but we support one another in our own lives and we enjoy our lives together and we grant one another an autonomy, but we really bless one another in that and we enjoy experiencing that autonomy together. We're friends. What's a complementarian relationship? What's an example of that?
Marriage.
I'll give you another one. You guys are in one right now. Father, son, parent, child. Parent, child. But a parent, child, people don't bring the same things like they do in a friendship, right? Hey, you throw me the ball, I throw you the ball. It's like an egalitarian thing. It's where we're doing the same thing. But with father and son, with parents and children, it's totally different, right? So how much does a 2-year-old bring to the relationship? Where's the boundaries of what a parent is supposed to bring to the relationship? So the 2-year-old's crying, they're hungry, they're ready to eat, they're starting to die. Does the parent go, you know what? I've already spent $400 on this. You know, I think I'm done. The parent is never done. Though he dies. To be a good parent, he keeps going. He never stops. It is a complete, total alignment. All that he has is now at the resource of this other individual. Now, a 3-year-old is also supposed to bring something. What's a 3-year-old supposed to bring?
Joy.
What?
Joy.
Joy? Okay, yeah, joy.
Energy.
Obedience. Yeah, and so a 3-year-old, he brings something. Does the mom and the dad obey in a perfect scenario? No! They don't obey the 3-year-old when the 3-year-old says, I want a chocolate. Is it through? Okay. Well, that's not good. That's the way it's not supposed to work. There's leadership on one side. There's submission on the other side. There's care on one side. There is entrusting on the other side. They bring different things. And perfect love, actually, how much is a 3-year-old entrusted to their parents? Does the 3-year-old go, well, you know what? I know. I think I'll hang around here today and tomorrow I'm going to go somewhere else. How entrusted is a 3-year-old?
100%.
100%. A parent
is one soul. His entire life is entrusted. It's like, I'm just all here. A parent is 100%. Not as a friend doesn't necessarily, in expressing good friendship, bring everything. As a matter of fact, that's part of your friendship, is there's a boundary. Hey, you've got your life. You want to turn around and go a different direction? My friendship lets you do that. We have the right to disconnect. There's a limitation in where our love goes in an egalitarian relationship. In a complementary relationship, there is no limit. Every single thing I have is brought to bring you good. Every single thing I have is brought to be united with you, and I entrust all that I am to you. I bring it all. I make my entire life vulnerable to you. This is so important. Get this. This is what is going on in God. This is what is going on in God. There is a person within the Godhood that says, everything I am, I express love. And the way I express love is I bring everything I am, and I unite with you. And another person in the Trinity says, I bring everything I am, and I put it all at risk to care and lead you. That's what's been happening forever. And now, God is going to make himself. What do you think is going to be part of that self? Take a 5-minute break. I'm going to take a break. I have two teachings down in the bottom.